Hello and welcome to the Illinois Audio Reader. In this half hour, I'll be bringing you part one of the Decatur News Herald. My name is Cedric Richardson. Thanks for joining me. Central Illinoisans are among 39 new COVID deaths statewide. 39 more people have died of COVID-19 in Illinois, and that includes several people from Central Illinois. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported on Tuesday 1,492 additional cases of the virus in Illinois and 39 additional deaths. They included a Tazewell County woman in her 70s, in LaSalle County a woman in her 80s, a man in his 80s and a woman in her 90s, a Macon County man in his 70s, in Sangamon County a woman in her 80s and a man in his 90s, a Christian County woman in her 80s, a Coles County man in his 70s, in Morgan County a woman in her 80s and a woman in her 90s, and a Moultrie County man in his 80s. Leslie Doherty of the LaSalle County Health Department clarified later Tuesday that the three LaSalle County deaths announced by the IDPH on Tuesday were the same fatalities reported by the County Health Department and the Pantograph on Monday. And Sarah Sparkman of the Tazewell County Health Department clarified later Tuesday that the Tazewell County death was the fatality that the county incorrectly reported on Monday as a woman in her 80s. The 39 deaths mean that 8,064 people have died of the virus in Illinois since March. The 1,492 newly confirmed cases mean that 236,515 Illinoisans have had the virus since March. The statewide positivity rate for COVID cases as a percent of total tests for the 7-day period ending Monday was 4.3%. As of Monday night, 1,513 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, with 362 of them in intensive care units. Also in the news, a constant task, school bus cleaning is more intense during COVID-19. Central A&M Schools had a plan for transporting students on buses safely during the pandemic. Superintendent Deanne Heck said masks would be required and buses would make more trips in order to have fewer students on them at a time. Then the district decided to go to fully remote learning for the first quarter at least. However, buses are still being used to deliver school meals to students, and after each trip, each bus is thoroughly cleaned, she said. With so many school districts using remote learning this fall, a lot of school buses and drivers are sitting idle, and in the few districts still open for in-person learning, cleaning is a constant task. We are cleaning the buses after the morning and afternoon routes. At this time, we don't have any more routes, but we do have fewer students riding the bus and more parents driving their kids to school, said Travis Roundcount, superintendent of Mount Zion Schools. We understand parents might change those arrangements throughout the year and allow their kids to ride the bus if they feel things are getting safer. We might also have fewer kids riding the bus if or when we have positive cases in our student population during this school year. We will be prepared to run two-tier bus routes for K through 6 students if that is needed. The parochial schools, St. Teresa High School, Holy Family, Our Lady of Lourdes, and St. Patrick Catholic Grade Schools, Lutheran School Association, and Decatur Christian School are open for in-person learning. But parents drive their kids and the schools don't offer bus transportation. Moroa Forsyth Schools posted its bus procedures on the district webpage, which encourages students and parents to provide their own transportation to and from school. Those who ride the bus are screened by a monitor before entering a bus. Temperature checks are done and hand sanitizer is distributed. Students have assigned seats. Family members will be seated together whenever practical. All drivers and students will be required to wear a mask during transportation. Windows will be open for cross-ventilation when possible, and routes will be adjusted to accommodate as needed. It also states that drivers will wipe down high-touch surfaces and that buses will be fogged after each route. Decatur Public Schools does not employ bus drivers directly. The district has a contract with Alltown Bus Service Incorporated, and while students are learning remotely, there is no need for the service. Bus maintenance is Alltown's responsibility when the buses are in use. At Sangamon Valley, classes won't begin until September the 8th. Remodeling at the buildings was delayed due to COVID-19, and the school board decided at its August meeting to delay the start of school to allow that work to be finished and for a thorough cleaning before students arrive. For K through 5, in-person learning will be as normal as possible. Grades 6 through 12 will be divided in A and B groups and attend classes on alternating days. Students could also choose remote learning. With the number of students that choose remote learning and our middle school and high school students attending on an A-B schedule, it was not necessary to add additional routes or stagger start times, said Bob Meadows, superintendent of Sangamon Valley. We will have approximately 40 students per bus. Warrensburg Latham schools are fully remote for the first quarter, while Cerro Gordo schools are offering a choice of remote or in-person classes. Superintendent Brett Robinson said about 80% of students opted for in-person learning. Students wear masks on buses and family members are seated together. All the students have socially distanced assigned seats on buses. In other local news, a 17-year-old was struck in the head with a bat during a fight and suffered a skull fracture, according to Decatur police. Police say a 17-year-old was hit in the head with a baseball bat during a fight in the 1700 block of East William Street. Court documents say the male was part of a huge fight involving 12 people on August 26th. It sparked from an ongoing feud between two other people. Documents say that at one point, a 21-year-old Decatur man struck the 17-year-old in the head with a baseball bat, causing him to stumble away, holding his head, and abruptly ending the fight. A sworn affidavit said he was taken to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital by a friend around 7:33 p.m. The boy suffered a skull fracture and two brain bleeds with a 4-inch abrasion to the left side of his head, according to the affidavit. Police say he was put into a coma and transferred to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield, where he was found to have significant brain swelling. The 21-year-old told police he'd hit the boy in the head, describing the bat as a wooden novelty bat and not a full-size baseball bat, documents say. He was arrested and booked into Macon County Jail on Saturday afternoon on preliminary charges of aggravated battery and mob action. A check of jail records Tuesday morning showed he remained held on $500,000 bail, meaning $50,000 is required for his release. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Barton Manufacturing in Decatur is to close September the 30th. Barton Manufacturing is closing its Decatur plant, with 47 people being laid off. General Manager Bruce Payne said a tentative last day is September the 30th. The company, based at 1395 South Taylorville Road, manufactures parts and equipment in the mining and road construction industries, as well as brake components and industrial valves, out of two facilities measuring more than 140,000 square feet. Payne said the company has been struggling for several years, but the shutdown was not related to COVID. Barton was founded in 1950 as Red Barton Incorporated and also operated at 600 East Wabash Avenue. The Taylorville Road factory was expanded in 2005 at a cost of $3 million. Rain is welcome. Central Illinois farmers welcome Tuesday's rain. Rain on Tuesday was a welcome relief to farmers who are now just weeks away from returning to the fields for harvest. This rain that we just got is definitely going to add more bushels, said Ryan Damerell, a seed and technology specialist with Evergreen FS in Bloomington. When it gets hot and dry, the soybeans will actually start to abort pods, and I hope this rain will limit that factor. DeWitt County farmer Marvin Finfrock says the yields will probably be all over the board. This corn has a lot of holes in it, he says. I think there's going to be good, bad, and ugly. I don't see a bumper crop, let's put it that way. On Monday, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop condition update for Illinois. It reported 13% of the corn crop was in excellent condition, 57% was in good condition, 23% was in fair condition, and 5% was in poor condition, and 2% was in very poor condition. 14% of the soybeans were rated in excellent condition, 58% were in good condition, 22% were in fair condition, 5% poor condition, and 1% in very poor condition. Across the state, topsoil moisture supply was rated 12% very short, 40% short, and 48% adequate. Logan County farmer Scott Peters said Tuesday that he was just starting to worry about the lack of rain. August was really dry, and the lack of rain probably hurt yields somewhat, but we didn't have a long, nasty heat wave, so that helped, he said. But we needed some rain. Dry conditions are expected for the remainder of the week, according to the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Afternoon high temperatures through the weekend are expected to be in the 80s, but the next chance of rain isn't until Sunday. I didn't get very much at all, Finfrock said. I'm pretty optimistic because the temperatures are still showing cool, so with cool temperatures, I'm more optimistic than if it were to stay hot and dry, said Damerell. Still, the lack of rain has had an effect. Up until last month, we were looking at bumper crops, Damerell said. We were looking at maybe setting some records and having some crops that were unheard of, but this deficit of rain that we've had in the last month took us backwards a little bit. Damerell remains optimistic that yields will be at a decent level. It seems like all of the early planted crops weathered the heat a lot better than the later planted crops did, he said. Macon County farmer Gene Forbes believes his yields will vary. I got some in early, and then the rain kept me out of the fields, and so I got some in late, he said. I am more concerned about the later crops than I am the early ones. Most of that is corn. Damerell has the same concerns. We had such a large range of planting dates, and as far as estimates, I'm finding anywhere for corn for 180 bushels per acre, way up into the 230s, he said. The dry weather has affected the corn, Finfrock said. I think 15 to 20 bushels off the top for sure, he said. I'm not a good judge on beans, but pod counts were way up, and they were looking really good. But with this dry spell, I don't know. This little bit of rain we are getting today is too little, too late, I'm afraid. And now I bring you some of the obituaries for today. James Sherman Ellinger. James Sherman Ellinger, 86, of Decatur, passed away August 29, 2020, at his residence. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, September the 4th, 2020, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service at the funeral home. Interment will be at Camp Butler National Cemetery at 2 o'clock p.m. on Friday. CDC guidelines will be followed, masks are required, temperatures will be taken at the door. Dwayne Phillip Forbes passed away at his home on Saturday, July 11th, 2020. Memorial services for Dwayne will be at 1:30 p.m. September 5th, 2020 at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. The visitation will be from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. on September 5th, 2020. Interment will be at Graceland Cemetery. Please view Dwayne's obituary and share memories and condolences at GracelandFairlawn.com. Janet M. Furnish. Janet M. Furnish, 88, passed away August 29th, 2020. A private graveside service will be held in Graceland Cemetery. Contributions in Janet's memory may be made to the Macon County Honor Guard, 27 Madison Drive, in Decatur, Illinois. The family has entrusted Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, located at 2091 North Oakland Avenue, in Decatur, Illinois, with Janet's funeral arrangements. Please view her obituary and share memories and condolences at GracelandFairlawn.com. Sandra S. Susie Krutzinger. Sandra S. Susie Krutzinger passed away on Thursday, August 30th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital, in Decatur, Illinois. A visitation celebrating Susie's life will be held from 5 o'clock p.m. until 7 o'clock p.m. Friday, September the 4th, 2020, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. In keeping with the orders from the state of Illinois, attendance to the visitation time will be limited to 50 people. Social distancing requirements are recommended and face coverings should be worn. Memorials may be made to American Diabetes Association or the National Kidney Foundation. Messages of condolences may be sent to the family at DawsonWickoff.com. Linda J. Schreiber. Linda J. Scribner of Spring Bay, 76 of Spring Bay, Illinois, passed away at 7:23 a.m. on Saturday, August 29th, 2020, at Unity Point Health Proctor in Peoria, Illinois. Cremation rites have been accorded. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, September 3rd, 2020, in Spring Bay Cemetery, with Reverend Gary Salm officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made at Spring Bay Fire and Rescue Squad, 407 Caroline, Spring Bay, Illinois, 61611. Online condolences may be made at masonfuneralhomes.com. Vivian Lucille Myers, 96, of Decatur, passed away on August 28th, 2020. Funeral services and a graveside service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September the 4th, 2020, at Graceland Cemetery in Decatur, with Pastor Stephen Cantrell officiating. Memorials may be given to the First Free Will Baptist Church or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are by Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel, 4020 North Water Street in Decatur. View the online obituary, send condolences, or share memories at DawsonWickoff.com. Donald Gene Talkington, Donald Dean Talkington, 89, of Central City, died Friday, August 28, 2020, at home, surrounded by his family. Funeral services will be private. Expressions of sympathy may take the form of donations to Hospice of Western Kentucky, 3419 Wathins Crossing, Owensboro, Kentucky, 42301, or do a kind gesture for someone in need. Tucker Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences can be made at tuckerfuneralhomes.com. James Michael Wetzel of Aiken, South Carolina, passed away on Tuesday, August 25th, at age 96. Funeral services, a requiem mass will be said Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020, at St. Mary Help of Christians in Aiken. A reception for friends and family will be scheduled for later this autumn in Aiken, the announcement of which is forthcoming. Memorial donations may be made to Catholic Medical Mission Board, P.O. Box 4715, New York, New York, 10163, or cmmb.org. Jim will be interred at the Queen of Peace Catholic Church Columbarium in Gainesville, Florida, this autumn. The historic George Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 211 Park Avenue Southwest in Aiken, South Carolina, 29801, has charge of arrangements. William Bill Kenneth Dressen passed away on August 20th after battling cancer at his home. A private family burial will be held at a later date, with the Macon County Honor Guard providing military funeral rites. In lieu of flowers, the family is requesting that donations be made to American Legion Post 105 Building Fund or the Macon County Honor Guard at 1535 Legion Drive, Decatur, Illinois, 62521. Charles Terry Nelson, 79, of Sierra Vista, Arizona, passed away peacefully on Thursday, August 20th, 2020, following a brief illness. Due to the pandemic, the family has planned a private funeral mass in Sierra Vista, followed by a celebration of life and burial in Illinois at a later date. James Francis Nolan Jr., 94, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, August 27, 2020, at Decatur Memorial Hospital, surrounded by his loving family. Mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Monday. Was at 11 a.m. on Monday, August 31st, 2020, at St. James Catholic Church. Visitation was from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Monday, before the start of the service. The burial was in St. Isidore Cemetery. Memorials may still be directed to St. James and Patrick Church at 407 East El Dorado Street, in Decatur, Illinois. The family of James Nolan Jr. is being served by Moron and Goble Funeral Home, located at 2801 North Monroe Street in Decatur, Illinois. Please view the online obituary, send condolences, and share memories at moronandgoble.com. And with that, that ends the obituaries for today. It is truly a unique year. A new conductor is set to lead the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra on a virtual stage. The Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra's 2020 season will be different than it has been in the past. Because of coronavirus restrictions, those wanting to enjoy the performances will have to do so virtually, and those who tune in will notice a new conductor, William McLean. "It's a unique year," McLean said. "I'm very excited about starting with a new orchestra. Concertgoers will be able to see performances streamed live on various websites, including the Millikan University YouTube page, the Symphony Orchestra Guild of Decatur website, the MDSO Facebook page. The first concert will be available for viewing at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, September 26th. McLean has 20 years of experience working with professional community and youth orchestras, but the MDSO is the biggest. Before arriving in Decatur, he was an assistant professor at Georgia College and State University in Milledgeville, Georgia, as well as conductor and performer for several symphonies throughout the country. Symphony Orchestra Guild President Peggy Ruff understands the orchestra will have a challenging season, but I think it's going to be a fantastic season," she said. "Dr. McLean is approaching this with such enthusiasm and determination to make this a wonderful season." Ruff met McLean in January during the interview process and witnessed the conductor's enthusiasm for programs and community outreach opportunities. "He is going to be great for Decatur," said Ruff. "He's going to present a lot of interesting concepts that we haven't had the benefit of hearing before." McLean also will serve as an instructor and a conductor at Millikan University. McLean will be replacing Sergei Bozda, who had conducted the MDSO since 2016. According to Ruff, the local orchestra is unique, with a mix of professional musicians, college students, and faculty. "We really have a hybrid ensemble," she said. "The students gain the benefit of being on the same performance stage with the faculty and also paid musicians. The conductor is looking on the bright side of a challenging first year. The good news is that a lot of great minds and great organizations are all working on this issue to provide the best procedures and policies to move forward," said McLean. "We do believe we can move forward and that the arts can still remain a strong, relevant part of our lives." Another difference viewers will notice is the smaller size of the local orchestra. Approximately 40 members will be part of each performance, nearly half of past MDSO orchestras. This is to stay in line with the current health guidelines. "But the music will still be great," said McLean. "It will still be exciting." According to McLean, the orchestra will be reminiscent of orchestras in the late 1800s. "They were much smaller," he said, noting composers such as Franz Schubert, Wolfgang Mozart, and Ludwig van Beethoven created pieces for smaller ensembles. String orchestra music will also be an added feature to this year's season. With a larger orchestra, woodwinds and percussion pieces are often highlighted during a performance. The future for audiences to join them is unknown at this time. A live outdoor event may be the orchestra's first attempt. And with that, I thank you for joining me here on the Illinois Audio Reader. Again, my name is Cedric Richardson. It's been a pleasure to read with you. I look forward to next time. Until then, goodbye.